It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Some would say that Farm to Table started 50 years ago when Alan Chadwick established the Organic Gardens at the University of California at Santa Cruz. That garden became one of the first bona fide organic farms, and over the past 50 years has propelled a food movement. This episode of Farm to Table Talk is at UC Santa Cruz at its Center of Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems as it celebrates the 50th anniversary of the farm and garden. Fittingly, illustrious former apprentices, students, and longtime supporters gathered to reflect on the impact this program is having on the world of food and to be challenged to take it to the next level. Three keynote speakers at the conference share their vision, their passion, and what they ask of us. We lead off with a conversation with Karen Washington, a recognized food justice leader and co-founder of Rise and Root Farm and Black Urban Growers. Then, a self-described descendant of slaves, a farmer, a chef, and proud alumni of the Santa Cruz apprenticeship, Matthew Rayford says we can be the change that's needed. And then finally, in her remarks from the podium, the world-renowned food movement leader, founder of the Edible Schoolyard, and creator of California cuisine, Alice Waters, gives us a bold goal for farm to school that could be accomplished in 5 years. So here we go, and you're joining this Farm to Table Talk at UC Santa Cruz in a conversation with Karen Washington and then being part of the audience as you hear calls to action from Matthew Rayford and from Alice Waters. Well, there are a lot of people involved in the food movement, and we're fortunate today to talk to somebody that's been very engaged in the food movement, involved in a lot of different angles, including, Karen, I'd have to say from what I've heard, you've even pulled a few weeds in your day, too. So our guest today is Karen Washington. She's the farm co-founder of Rise and Root Farms. And Karen, I believe you're in New York.
Yes, our farm is up in Chester, New York. We're a four-woman run farm. Some of us are people of color. Some of us are LGBTQ women. And we take all our experience from the urban area up into the rural area.
Well, I want to hear all about that. So how does that happen exactly?
Well, the thing is that all of us have a background in community gardens and urban farms, and what we wanted to do is just grow big. So I think if people can understand the comparison between urban and rural farming, it's basically size. And so we felt that it was time for us to move up in size, and we were able to get 3 acres up in Chester.
So what are the kind of products you grow up there?
So we grow a lot of medicinal herbs, edible flowers, bouquets we make, and of course a range of vegetables such as a lot of tomatoes. We have over 1,000 tomatoes, mostly heirloom tomatoes. We're growing different types of brassicas. You name it, we're growing.
So do you live up there?
So what I do is I commute. I stay up there 4 times during the week, and the other times I commute because I still work in my community garden and I still have my backyard.
Okay, and where's the community garden at?
So my community garden is in the boogie down Bronx, New York. It's called the Garden of Happiness, and it's been in existence now 29 years.
Karen, you're doing that way before it became fashionable.
Yeah. Yes, I have. I think, well, not before it was fashionable. I think before now it's more mainstream. The people now wanting to grow in urban areas, and I think that's terrific.
So if you're in the Bronx, how many people get involved in working in the garden with?
Well, I think it's very important that when you say the word community gardens, what stands out is community. So we have over 20 families in our community garden, 36 plots, and it's just a wealth of culture, a wealth of tradition. The majority of our farmers and gardeners now in our community garden are Mexican, and so they bring the array of papalo, papiche, epazote, and I just love it.
So what's a typical day? I mean, you get up and you're out in the gardens and other people are showing up. How early do they get started usually?
Oh, we start 6 o'clock in the morning. We have to start six o'clock in the morning, and people come early in the morning to water and to weed because, you know, it gets very hot, so it's very important to start early in the morning.
So are they using it for their own use or are they reselling it?
Most of the produce is for our their own use. And whatever is left, we have a farmer's market. So we started a farmer's market 13 years ago in collaboration with other community gardens and rural farms. And so part of it is sold as well. And that money comes back in community for job creation and economic empowerment.
So everything from your farm that you've got outside of New York to the people that are working in your community gardens, they're all connected, they're all growing food. Where is this heading? Where do you see these kind of enterprises like you're engaged with, where do you see them heading over the next several years?
I think it's going to be very important as people start to connect the dots of food and health, especially in low-income neighborhoods where you don't have a supermarket. People are starting to take matters in their own hand and starting to grow food for their family and their community, and I think that's important.
So, and that has been the case. In some parts of the Bronx, would it be considered a food desert?
Well, we hate to use that food desert. We rather use the food apartheid instead of food desert, because we do have food. What we don't have is good, healthy food.
If you want people to do something to help in the directions that you're heading, what do you ask of them?
Not to be complacent or silent. I said those are the two things that are hurting this food movement: complacency, silence, and also diversity. I think when I go out and speak, I want to make sure if we talk about a sustainable food system, that food system is diverse and it's not one race of people that's controlling our food.
Well, I have to point out, because this is radio, the podcast, so you're an African-American, and oftentimes when you go to settings like we're seeing here tonight, there's not much diversity here. How do we overcome that? How do we make sure that we get more people engaged?
I tell people that the power of asking, the reason why I'm here, because someone asked me to be here. So I think it's up to a lot of people, especially when they're doing conferences and workshops, that to go out of your comfort zone and go and talk to people, invite them to be here. And I think if more people did that, if they got out of their comfort zone and made themselves feel uncomfortable to be comfortable, then you will see more diversity in this food movement.
You know, Karen, you seem really, really enthusiastic. And so to share those enthusiasms, if people want to know more about your journey and about the programs that you're involved with, where do they go for more information?
RiseAndRootFarm.org. I'm in New York. Just look me up on Facebook, Karen Young Washington, and let's get the ball rolling.
Karen, thanks so much for being on Farm to Table Talk.
And thank you so much for inviting me to speak.
Karen Washington, I need you to stand. And the reason I say that is the only reason that I decided to go forward and try to have a fundraiser was a conversation that Karen Washington had with me. And when she goes, "Brother, you're the only one here. I need you to understand that you need to make a difference. This is what it's about. The connections that we have here, we change. We make the change. We want policy change, we should talk to somebody next to you." So it behooves all of us to figure out whatever change we're going to make for whatever region we happen to live in. Black, white, purple, or green. The world is not going to change without us making it happen. Karen gave us something earlier today and said, "Hey, if you don't see the diversity that you want, ask somebody to become that." Right? Ask somebody to be the change. We are the change.
So I think we need school-supported agriculture. Okay? We want to feed every student K through 12 for free. A school breakfast, lunch, and an afternoon snack. We want to make school lunch look like this. We want to make school lunch part of academia so that we can have the time and attention to really teach the human values that are missing in our fast food culture. And we're at a very serious point. So we need to support all the people who are taking care of the land. And so you are all being deputized to be part of this initiative. Now, I'm unwilling to think of it as a 50-year plan. This is kind of a five-year plan. It addresses all of the issues that we have. Childhood hunger is eliminated. We can feed children nutritious food and they grow up learning about good health for themselves, learning how to cook. I've been doing the Edible Schoolyard for 22 years. And I can tell you the one truth. When kids are involved with growing food and cooking it, they all eat it. It's 6 weeks to kale. Very, very easy. But we use the garden and we use the kitchen classroom as academic labs. It's not cooking or gardening per se. It is math, science, it's a language, it's a history class. And the kids really love it because it's interactive. They're empowered, really empowered by this. And so we have been developing on our website all the best practices from schools around the world. We went from last year 3,500 to 5,500 schools that have gardens, kitchen classrooms, or school lunch programs that are trying to teach the values of stewardship, nourishment, and communication. It's kind of amazing because this is, I can't think of it any other way. This is such a delicious thing to do. This is taking those human values that we all really want to eat together. We all want to be connected to nature. It's our mother. And we've been taken away and we've been imprisoned, really, by a fast food culture that's destroying the world. It's teaching us the values of fast, cheap, and easy, that uniformity is important, that time is money, that advertising confers value, that it's cooking is drudgery, farming is even worse, that food should be cheap. And food has never, ever, ever been cheap. It's always been precious. You never wasted it. And our culture's telling us it's okay to waste. There's always more where that came from. Don't worry about it. Eat in your car. And the only way that we're going to reach these children is to show them that we really, really care about them. And when you put flowers on the table, and you bring them to the table, they feel it. They feel like we really, really care about them. And that's, again, one of the things that's being preached to our children is that they aren't important. They don't have any money to spend. So they aren't important. Get somebody else to take care of them, you know? They can't eat with us because they make a mess and they don't like our food. I mean, these are messages that they're hearing and feeling. So we have to just pull them back and really give them that land to throw themselves down in the grass, to reconnect. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing to see and to do. And I am really convinced that we can do this in the next 5 years.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.